And I'll tell you what, that makes so much sense nowadays, given what's going on.
Yeah. See, I can't tell. Is it working? Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, February 9th, 2017. It's 9 a.m., 9:01. This is the Josephine County Administrative Workshop, and we have legal counsel. However, we have moved legal counsel's meetings to earlier in the week, either Tuesday or Wednesday. But there they are. So nothing specifically on the agenda today. It's just kind of like a catch-all, just in case we need to do something that we didn't do earlier in the week, which often happens. So in this case, I think we do have something.
Better happen.
There is a letter regarding designation of certain county real properties as parks or recreational, which we did discuss, I think, just all the days on together. Was that yesterday or the day before?
That was yesterday.
And so the basic idea here is that county inherits, at our greatest reluctance, properties through the tax foreclosure process after 6 years. And our policy is to divest the county of those from either a liability standpoint or getting them back on the tax rolls as soon as possible. In order to do that, we need to ask permission to the city of either Grants Pass or Cave Junction, wherever these reside, and all of these reside in Grants Pass, whether or not they approve of us designating those as forestry or parks. We do that designation so that we can sell those properties and take those resources and reinvest it into capital projects within forestry and parks. And so we're just going through that step in the process of requesting that the city designate the sign a resolution, right? An order?
Resolution.
Endorsing that designation, giving the county kind of permission to do that. So I think it's in the best interest of everybody, the city included, that the county pursue that as quickly as possible. If they don't, we've had properties that have been sitting out there in a fallow state for years, sometimes decades, and that's not good for the neighborhoods in which they reside, or the city or the county as a whole. So I think this is really proactive. I want to thank Pat Ellison and our legal office, Wally and Mike Watson, for getting this going. I don't think we've done this since I've been in office. If we have, I don't remember. It's been a while, and I think it's a real positive step in the right direction of getting these in the process and getting them back on the tax roll. So, any questions?
No, I feel comfortable with what we discussed yesterday.
Okay. Great. We've got a letter. I'd entertain a motion, if you wouldn't mind, just to kind of codify this in the record.
Does it need music? I always want to respond to Smart Alecky when I hear entertain. I just am sorry.
You are not allowed to dance. Let me just tell you that. There's an order somewhere.
Yeah, I tap my toe. That's it.
We count low sunshine.
That's yeah. Right. I would move that we, move that we would sign a letter.
Maybe reference the subject.
I would make a motion that we would send a letter for designation of certain county real properties as parks or recreational to Mayor Fowler and the council members.
I'll second that. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 2-0. Commissioner DeYoung is out of the office today, and so we'll move that forward. Thank you so much. Anything else? Next one. Great. We will move on to quarterly updates, department updates. We have just two today. It's a really short administrative calendar. We have airport and transit. So, Mr. Graves.
Want
to go first? I hope so. Did
you guys wrestle? Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
You've seen the file that I sent out, or had Barbara send out this morning.
There's
a printed copy if you want them. These will be classics, worthy of framing in the future.
Yeah.
So it's been a pretty good quarter, and most recently, great news coming out of the new ODOT or ODA, Oregon Department of Aviation ASAP Corps program. So this is a 2 cents a gallon jet fuel tax that has been designated for rural airports in the state of Oregon. This is the first year that the grant program was available, and $1.7 million for all of the rural airports in the state of Oregon, and and it looks like we're going to get about 32% of that money, with 5 of 7 applications being recommended for funding. It's not final yet, but it looks like it's going to go through because they rarely change the final recommendations at the Aviation Review Board.
I don't recollect a time, maybe in veteran service, that's not true, where Josephine County did that well as far as, like, you know, dominating the application process.
$585,000 is incredible.
Yeah, that's really
decimating here.
535, yeah.
But it could be because of the deferred element that we have a lot of stuff that maybe other airports have already taken care of, but
I think there's a lot of pent-up demand here that they're beginning to recognize.
Right.
And they've been, you know, watching as we've been
momentum
getting these
building
grants. Yeah, and they
we'll
see
be able
that.
To leverage this when you go talk to the FAA about, look at what we...
Right.
So everybody's at the table.
Yeah. So there's momentum building for Josephine County's airports. And you know, among the main issues that will remain for us is that every time we get a capital grant, you know, from the state or from the federal government, we have to come up with the matching money. And I'm hoping that this CORE program, this ASAP grant program, is going to be a semi-permanent fixture for us, and that will be very helpful. And that wasn't on the horizon just 2 years ago. So.
So that's a 2 cent per gallon aviation
jet fuel tax. Yeah, and it essentially hits the airlines.
Specifically for rural airport infrastructure.
Yeah.
Because you've got this already, but the big boys usually dominate those revenue streams.
Yes, they do. Yeah, and there's only, up until now, there's been a 1 cent per gallon jet fuel tax and a 9 cent per gallon 100 LOLED or piston fuel tax, which hits the little guys.
Yeah.
Really hard, and hasn't been touching the airlines, and of course they pass it through, so the net effect is about a few cents on the cost of a ticket, you know, of an airline ticket. So it's a great program. I mean, I'm typically against taxation of any kind, okay, but I'll
so this is all matching money for those other grants that you've applied for.
Their number one priority in this program is to provide matching funds for existing AIP or state grants.
And your number one challenge is finding that match money for those grants, which you often qualify for.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so this is a good thing. This is a good thing. And going forward, I'm hoping that it... you know, I hope it's wildly successful. I hope everybody recognizes the value of that program and they continue it.
Yeah.
So
great.
Yeah, yeah. Just lots of things moving forward. You know, sometimes it feels like, you know, two steps forward, three steps back. We got a stop work notice from SHPO on one of our projects at the Illinois Valley Airport because they discovered that the smoke jumpers had a historical designation for their ramp area, which was unusual. It's just flat asphalt. And they designated it with some historical, with the National Park Historical Registry, because there's a chunk of concrete out there that has a couple of signatures from the old smoke jumpers back in the 40s. And so they wanted to preserve that. And so they included it as part of the historic district. Nobody remembered that or thought much about it at all when we were proposing and having public meetings at the Airport Advisory Board about this Grant 7 that we have, and Grant the follow-on grant, which will be Grant 8 for construction out there, which was to dig out that whole ramp and replace it because it's shattered asphalt. It's all coming apart. You can't maintain it. You can't even clean it. And it's dangerous for airplanes to taxi around on because they pick up chunks of asphalt and it damages the props and it throws the rocks, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So everybody agreed that that needed to be redone. And then suddenly it was realized at the last moment. And that's, we go through these reviews to make sure that nothing gets dropped through the cracks, that the historic district was there and that it included dirt and asphalt. So I'm not sure how that happened in 2006. I don't know how you can designate asphalt to be historic, but it was. So we have to live with that. So we had to do some re-engineering, and we spent about 4 weeks redesigning the, you know, the options, and finally came up with one, the sixth one, that SHPO and the FAA were happy with. So now we're moving forward again. And,
well, what is that?
We're going to move the entire ramp area north to avoid the historic district entirely, and into an area which is currently some other old asphalt and a helipad and dirt. And it's up in front of, there's four hangars that are right up along there, along the fence line. So this ramp will be in front of there. Pardon me?
How far north?
Well, adjacent. So we're right at the edge. Like right at the northern edge of the historic district is where we will begin our ramp, and it'll go north from there for a couple hundred yards.
Is there anything we can do with the historic designation of getting that amended?
Yeah, but it takes time. And the amendment process, even if the smoke jumpers were agreeable to that, would take over a year and push back not only our environmental and engineering design project, but also the construction project. So we just decided to fight that battle
later.
Later, yeah, and go with the current grant and spread out that ramp area. So ultimately we'll wind up having, I think, a larger ramp for parking and for aircraft movement. We don't have a taxiway at that airport. So all movement of airplanes on that entire airport going north and south has to be done on the runway, which is not ideal. And as the airport gets busier and busier, there's going to be growing pressure from a safety standpoint to put in a full-length taxiway. And that is in the airport layout plan and the master plan, but currently no money programmed for that because the FAA programs their money based on priorities of use and frequency and safety issues. And all
well, it wouldn't be our priority either. I mean, I see the use increasing, but until you get like a tenant on that industrial park, I would, you know, between the two, you prioritize stuff to go to Grants Pass where they're at capacity and a real hazard, you know, having that extended runway on East Side Taxiway, because right now it's only halfway, you know, you're funding for that. So there's other priorities.
Very true. So anyway, those are that's really the only thing that I could say about stumbling or slowdowns or anything out, you know, in this past quarter, and everything else is pretty good news. The new airport weather observation system is up and running. It's certified. I'm getting really glowing reports from all the users out there that it's saving them hundreds and hundreds of dollars per flight when they're out on their way back from Portland or coming in from Salt Lake or coming in from L.A. or wherever, and they can listen to that, you know, 60 or 100 miles out.
Mm-hmm.
They can hear that weather report of the current conditions at Grants Pass and then tell Seattle Center or Cascade Approach, I'm going to shoot the approach into Grants Pass because I have 100% confidence I can make it. Whereas before, they had no weather information at all from Grants Pass, and they had to plan on shooting the approach at Grants Pass, missing the approach, and then flying over to Medford and flying an approach there, and then having the SUV come over, or they bought an SUV to put over there so that they could shuttle their pilots and passengers back to Grants Pass when they had to divert. And the diversions have been cut in by two-thirds since October when that went live. So I'm gathering all the data on that so I can demonstrate to the Connect Oregon program the real dollar value impact for the local economy and for commercial aviation here and the improvement in the transportation system. That's one of the requirements of the Connect Oregon grants is that I follow up after the grant is the project is completed and provide proof that the project was worthwhile. And you know, you can't just wave your arms and send them a nicely worded document. I mean, you need to back it up with the facts. So I'm currently gathering all that data since October from the users out there. And I'm having people just call me or come into my office spontaneously to say, this is fantastic. This is really good. And it's going to get even better later this year when they publish a brand new instrument approach for that airport, which has been in the works for years now. I think I started that project in 2012. And it takes that long for the FAA to decide that it's worthy and then begin to the design process. They've identified 20 clusters of trees we need to cut down in order to allow this lower minimum for the approach altitudes. So we'll be doing that. Hopefully I can use my own crew for it. But anyway, just lots of stuff going on. So we have pavement maintenance. We're going to get a new slurry seal at the Grants Pass Airport, and then they'll repaint the runway. I'm hoping to be able to now increase our jet fuel capacity. Our Jet A, we sell three times as much Jet A now for turbine engines as we do for piston engines. But my piston engine fuel capacity is 10,000 gallons, and for the Jet A, it's only 5. So I need to get another 10,000-gallon tank out there for Jet A, and those are expensive. You know, they're double-walled, self-contained, and all that. So they have to meet all the NEPA standards, and it just increases the cost.
Is there any benefit to everything that Millionaire over there is getting rid of?
Well, you know, I've been in touch with them a couple of times. They've actually called me and offered another fueler, but they wanted $55,000 for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have three fuelers right now that have been donated to us by City Service Falcon. So, you know, when I have that option in front of me, it's really not very attractive to go out and buy a $55,000 20-year-old truck.
Right.
You know, so,
is it certified already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're all certified. All of them are, and they get recertified every year by the state of Oregon. They come in and
examine your purchase.
Well, I didn't purchase it.
No, I mean,
if I were, it would, yeah, I definitely would be, if I were to do that. So that's a target item for another core grant on the next go-around for the next year. We've got a great guy who's moved in recently into the Illinois Valley. His name is John Pappas. He's an aviation professional. He's in his early 70s, but he's been around. He's owned 20 or 30 airplanes in his life, and he's very enthusiastic about giving back to the community. He wants to establish an aviation library at the Illinois Valley Airport. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've put him in touch with the Smoke Jumpers, and we're talking about some of the improvements and developments and activities that he wants to foster out there. So we're looking at having big advertising signs out on 199 north and south of the airport advertising, hey, come and see, you know, the Illinois Valley from the air. Mm-hmm. And because there's a million people that drive down that road every year, and we want to try to reach out and maybe generate some more aviation activity at the airport that way. So he's bringing in some energy and some ideas, and I'm really happy about that. Anyway, if you have any questions about this, I could talk forever. It's a pretty good news report.
It always is.
Well, yeah, I mean, not always, but...
I haven't had one yet that I didn't think that there was a lot of positive stuff going on.
There is. Well, there's a lot of positive going on, so, yeah.
You've had fallow ground to till, and you're doing everything, I think, that needs being done out there. I think I'd like an update on the extra hangars, and you had a challenge of mitigating a wetlands before you could move forward on and where we add on moving the power lines.
Mm-hmm.
Pacific Power is going to have tons of resources after these high power bills, so they should be able to pay for whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They're giving us a $400,000 bill to relocate, to reroute the transmission lines around the outside of the airport. They currently run right through the airport.
Do they have an easement?
Yes. And I know. I wasn't here. Not me. I mean, there's so many decisions that have been made over the past. I just can't. I shake my head.
I know.
But
and that's why when people do things and they say, oh, it looks great. Sounds excellent.
Right.
So is putting a power line through the airport.
Yeah.
What?
Now, let's designate the asphalt a historic district.
Jeez. The list is long, my friend.
Yeah.
Hey, my parents have a corner of a wall that never gets painted for their grandkids growing higher and the kids. So I understand protecting something.
Yeah.
They paint all the way around it. They just preserve.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I grew up with six kids, so we had the kitchen door frame, which was just
your mom ran out of
hash marks. Yeah, that's right. Pencil marks. Anyway.
Is that project progressing?
Yeah, that project is progressing. We've made a mitigation payment for the wetland, and so we received permission to proceed. And we just yesterday I sent a letter to the FAA recommending that we choose one of the six bidders who have bid on the clearing and grubbing, it's called, where we're going to clear that whole area out where the new hangars are going to be built and the taxi lanes are going to be put in. And I expect that that will be awarded. We'll issue a notice of intent to award. You got all these things we have to do in a certain order, probably today or tomorrow. And that starts a seven-day period where everyone has a chance to ask questions or protest or whatever they want to do. And then the contract will be issued, and I'll be bringing that probably a week from now to discuss with you the specifics of that contract, and then to the WBS to have you sign that, because it's about a $100,000 contract.
Seems like intent to award letters come from us, but if you've got a way to do it otherwise, that sounds interesting. You know.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I signed a number of those.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly run it past you and and put a signature block on it if you're interested.
As long as it conforms to all the BOLI stuff, there's just a number of things that you want to make sure that you're doing when you're that there is a 7-day challenge period, those issues can come up by other potential bidders, and I'm not opposed to it. I just, if you're doing it, then there are other departments doing it, and then am I needing to do it ever?
Well, you know, and all these forms that all these things that we do have a complete set of instructions, and there's actually a definition of who's authorized to sign this kind of thing. And they want, for example, I signed a DEQ 1200C permit request, and we sent in a check for $2,000, and this is a permit to build siltation fences and to prevent, runoff damage, to the coho salmon and whatever else from this work in this area that's on this Grant 10. And who's authorized to sign? Well, it says the highest public official associated with this facility, or the highest elected official in the government subdivision. So. You could say, well, I'm the airport manager, and this is the airport. It's the public facility. I'm the highest guy here. I'll sign it. And then there are others who would say, perhaps, I mean, you could argue that, nope, highest elected official. It needs to be the full board. And this is for a DEQ permit, a 1200C. So I
think
signed
in
it.
Those situations under $50,000, we have an order that says
exactly.
The liaison at the least is the delegate of the board to do those things. Anything over 50, and it needs to come to the
board,
which you're planning on doing.
Exactly,
but
and which we just did for, for.
I don't want our processes to be cumbersome, but I also don't want managers put at greater liability that we've experienced in the past by managers doing stuff that wasn't, 100%
well thought out
and stuff. And qualified, experienced, long-term managers, maybe not crossing every T, but we try to just guide best we can.
Okay, appreciate that.
Just a thought.
Thank you for having my back.
Always. Let the liability trickle up. That's our job. The big bucks. The water suppression system at the IB is something Commissioner Morgan is interested, passionate about spearheading for a solution. And I know we've discussed this. You and I have gone out there and taken a look at it. I don't think Commissioner Morgan has had the opportunity to do that yet.
We've been waiting for the weather to calm down.
It doesn't look like there's no water in it when there's a lot of water in it. What's wrong? It's full. What are you talking about?
Right.
But no, we've been talking about getting those tours and stuff going from a different perspective. I went in May and got a tour out with the smoke jumpers and just on my own went out there.
Okay.
But that's not from the perspective of...
I just want to include Julie Schmelzer in that thing. She and I were talking about getting with you and doing that. I don't necessarily need to see it again. I know exactly what it looks like. And I don't want to hold up any kind of a process because you haven't, because you can go on Google Earth and you can do a really pretty good look, and he can explain the fact that there's a holding pond, doesn't hold water, let's figure out how to hold water. It's not rocket science, but how do we get that in the queue? There's rumors of a Philip Morris of the world looking to purchase rough and ready or lease or whatever. that, in my mind, is almost inevitable.
Yep.
So how do we prepare for whoever it is wants to locate out there?
Right.
And there's these concepts of having a virtual design for a kind of a facility, and maybe you have three or four designs. I want to tease that out as a project for, you know, Ausland to come in and say, would you mind doing the preliminaries as a kind of a pro bono, that you're well inclined to probably get that contract should it ever come to fruition? I thought a lot about the idea that we could take advantage of that specifically there, because all of the infrastructure minus the water suppression system is there.
Yeah.
We do have a shovel, almost shovel-ready spot.
Well, the other thing that occurred to me when that came up, you know, when Rough and Ready first declared BK a couple of years ago, then they got their flow and then they went BK again, was the large tract of land that's on the airport side of 199, which is Perpetua or Rough and Ready also, and that's where they used to have all their log drying racks. And that's just, it's empty now, completely empty.
Yeah.
That is a logical candidate for airport property, okay, for future growth. And I discussed this with Cheryl Walker, my liaison, when she was here, and I told her, you know, this is a very attractive thing, but one of my tenants as a enterprise fund and kind of running this as a business is that if there's going to be an investment made to purchase property for the airport, it needs to be something that has a live business case that's going to progress rapidly with people committed, letters of intent, we'll occupy that space as soon as you have it built for us, you know, that kind of thing, because it needs to be an income-producing asset for the airport. So as it is, we're neutral. I don't know what's going to happen to that piece of property, but I don't have the potential tenants, you know, lined up or aware of the possibilities even, you know, of development in that part, airport-related development, you know, in that piece of property. So, and, you know, it's in the big grand scheme of things, it just, it's maybe too soon in the lifetime of that airport. It's just, you know, it's an old airport, but
what I would like to do is just...
There's not the commercial demand yet, you know.
I think you're absolutely right in your assessment that it wouldn't be cost-benefit. There are other places we could put resources that would pay dividends. Maybe
right away.
Right away.
Yeah.
But doing... That there isn't people speculating about what needs to be done. No, we have a definitive answer. And if you sign here for $100K, you solve that problem and it's shovel-ready.
Yeah.
The contractors are these three people to do that work. That's what I would like to see, that we have it all in a pamphlet.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is the impediment. Because right now, you've talked about what you think, what I think, and what predecessors have thought about what the challenge was there. And there's been, in my estimation, at least two or three attempts at trying to solve that who haven't really been successful. I don't want to say that you're not right. You may be 100% right. But hiring that hydrologist or whoever to say, this, because I don't think we've ever done that, which is probably one of the challenges of why it didn't get done correctly in the first place, but doing that, I would see that as a priority, that we could spend a little bit of money out of economic development or wherever to say we want a definitive answer of this is a qualified engineer who's done that study and this is what the answer is.
Yeah.
We're not gonna write the check for the $100,000 that it takes to put in an actual tank or whatever else is the solution.
Well,
but there isn't any doubt about what the solution is.
And I talked with Charlie Chase when he was still here about the potential solutions for it, and he thought that the mil-spec bladder idea was genius, because there was this huge bladder, so it's like 60 by 70 feet, that would be 6 feet high when completely filled with water, would hold over 100,000 gallons of water, and complete with all the valving and everything to connect it to the existing fire hydrant system, which is dry, but it's out there. I mean, it's already out there in that industrial park for fire suppression. And, I mean, there were...
That sounds reasonable. I mean, you were looking
Exactly. We were looking at $10,000 to buy one of those things, brand new, never used mil-spec, in the crates, and delivered on site. You know, there'd be probably $1,000 worth of delivery charges. And then we would have to, engineer it and get it set
the
up.
The water plant. If you drive by the M Street water plant right now, you will see all those ladders off to the right of that plant that they use for stuff over there. So
it seems, almost silly or childlike, but it's actually pretty decent technology. And we could lay that thing right in that pond, which has got the failed bottom surface, just lay it right in there, and it would be right there, ready to hook up to the existing piping.
I like that this sounds like it won't be that challenging, but all of the things that we don't anticipate, the shape of that pond is not the shape of the...
Of the
bladder. So
we've done some looking at that, too. So
I'd like all of that
modified... The pressurized aspect to actually have some fire suppression had a pressurized, that kind of...
We've got pumps right there. It's really interesting. There's that whole biodynamic septic system that's right adjacent to where that pond was.
Yeah.
That's in place. There's a pump house and a control panel and all that stuff that's ready to be populated. We actually have power. It's hot right to these large foot lockers in that industrial park.
Yeah, it's ready to go.
It's ready to go. I've had Jason working on clearing it again because in the 15 years since work stopped where they had it graded flat, there's 3 or 4 foot high, buck brush and ceanothus and manzanita and everything else. So he's great. He's clearing that out one lot at a time.
Gradually. As a project goal for 2017 for me for Ivy Airport, that we put a bow on that and we know definitively. We know definitively. It's not speculating. It's not, it's somebody who's qualified to tell us exactly what it is.
At least having the plan in place, then we know when to go forward, when the time is to go forward, and exactly what to do.
Yep.
And there's going to be a time that we're going to be focusing on there for jobs and for expansion of commercial opportunities. So with that industrial park, it'd be nice to use it and put some people in the Illinois Valley to work.
Well, we came close to a couple of good ideas. The organizing company was not up to snuff, but one of the sub companies that was going to be part of this UAV technology center was Ivy Data Center, and they will need a large facility and there's fiber running right along 199 right now, and we need to trench 1,300 feet to get it all the way into that industrial park from 199. Plans are already in place. We actually have finished engineering drawings of the as-built condition of that industrial park right now that show all the infrastructure that's in place, underground, utilities, everything, and serve as a foundation or a basis for future planning. It's all there.
You have that in
PDF. I can email it to you.
I'd like to have it in something that you can just hand somebody that comes through. Yes, what you're looking for, these are the 5 things that need to be done to get fiber, whatever. You know what I mean, Larry?
Yep.
Punch list of sorts.
Yeah, exactly. So that they're not, it's what we expect people to eventually have when they come into the planning office. And I could work with Julie Schmelter on that. That's kind of her role, her task as well. That's not necessarily all yours to say, when I go through and I want to start this facility that I have, well, here's a potential copy of the building. These are the 3 options that we've already explored. The engineer who did them and their contact information.
Yep.
Everything just ready to go. Because that's exactly what we're competing with when we're looking at somebody wanting to go to Madras or somewhere else.
Yeah.
They kind of have that stuff.
They do. And the other thing that just kills me is that I've had many conversations with companies that are ready to move somewhere and, in fact, did after.
Yeah.
And they said, what are you going to do for us?
Yeah.
So-and-so city's going to give us $1 million worth of whatever, or they're going to waive all development fees, or they're going to, so far, I got nothing, in terms of...
But I think you do. I think you've got something. If you could package it and say, all of this,
right.
I don't need a huge revenue. It's been paid for. It's fully depreciated, that infrastructure. In my opinion, I don't need a huge revenue.
I would never tell anybody I don't want the huge revenue.
If I'm competing, that's not my priority.
I understand.
If you're on that field and you get a duck on a pond. The first one are not the revenue generators.
Right.
It's the everybody else.
The ones who get called
try to get with that they call it tenant, what is it? You know, when you put a big box store in a developed...
Yeah, anchor tenant.
Anchor tenant.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'd get some swans out there as opposed to a duck or two. But yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah. The other one I had is, I think 17-18 budget is something we want to work with you really closely on.
Okay.
The economic development dollars, Julie's already working on her proposed budget of that. It's going to be a little different than it has been in the past.
That's fine. I would expect that, yeah.
Endorse it 100%. But I really wanted to give her the opportunity to say, everything's on the table. Mm-hmm. You develop a plan and tell us what the bang for the buck is. And then we'll say, we hear that priority, but this is our priority. And
right.
We're gonna, but she needs to have freedom to do that. And I just wanted you to make sure that you're tracking along with that. And then the long-term project goals. You and I have been talking for years about maybe even properties at the end of the runway in Grants Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we getting in the queue? What resources are we? I want to know all the stuff that's in your dream world so that my dream world is yours and Morgan's is tracking. And we're, you know, we've got, I don't know how many properties we're going to be, well, we just did that, right? Shoot, that's how we're, that we're looking to sell.
Yeah.
Oh, we can only designate those as parks and forestry. But just because, you know, there's land at the end of the runway and you want it doesn't mean the parks couldn't buy it.
Right.
And
well, I think it would be important to have, where we can, county ownership of the land that's immediately adjacent to the boundary of the airport, because that acts as a buffer. I mean, there's a creek down at the base of that property that could be a wonderful thing, addition for parks, for example. Just to create a park, you know.
Totally possible.
And I would love
DC
that.
DC has that park right at the end of their runway that is
packed
with people. And it's kind of cool to be right under.
They like that. Yeah, people like watching the planes come in.
Right,
they get as closer to them than they can any other time.
Right.
I agree with that. I would love to see something like that happen.
Okay.
Right now we've got, you know, there's probably about 7 lots that are along that stretch of Brookside Boulevard before it curves around.
Yeah.
We own, I think, 4 of those. And then there are these private owners that are sort of stuck in between. And they're doing compatible things, but, you know, that you never know what's going to happen with that. So
that's just one example of what is it on your horizon.
Yeah.
And maybe you and I sit down over coffee and you go through all that. And
say,
let's do it. I want to find a creative way to solve
utilize
some of your
that.
Challenges.
Yeah. Okay.
So one question came up this week as we were talking about opportunities for volunteerism and projects and just engaging our youth and different items. And one of the questions is completely random was, how is our airport labeled? From the sky, can you see that it's Grants Pass Airport?
You can.
And where is it labeled?
It's actually painted in 30-foot high letters right on the pavement right in front of the terminal building.
Okay. Does it need updated or anything?
Yes, it does. I desperately need to update most of the paint. And the parking lot. Well, that's the runway.
Included?
That's the runway, and so the parking ramps are not included. But it's on my list. It's on my punch list of things that need to get done. There's a vast list of infrastructure items that need to be taken care of.
I don't remember where we were and who we were talking to, but the idea was, what, you know, in my opinion, I've had so many conversations this week about the kids in our community, and to me, something that was significant was that I volunteered on putting in one of the playgrounds at Highland Elementary and Riverside Park. Now, granted, they were wood, and so they've already been replaced because they were splintering and all that kind of stuff after 30 years, but you don't damage things you had a part in building. And if you take pride in, I did that. The opportunity to engage some of our youth in volunteer efforts and giving them a project to do that in turn might increase interest in aviation or other opportunities. So the Grants Pass label kind of came to mind as one of those opportunities of seeing, you know, who could we engage to see if they would want to take part in that within safety measures and all that.
Sure. Well, there's no problem with having, you know, junior high or high school kids, you know, working out on the airport, even on the air side of the fence under adult supervision. We have a lot of really energized older people who are, you know, pilots, ex-pilots, retired folks I have a big core of volunteers out of that airport. They were the ones who taught our first summer academy for junior high school kids, which was, if you listen to the kids, it was a big hit. You know, we're going to do that again this year. We're looking at ways to grow that and make it permanent. We have a partnership now with Rogue Community College because they have an active STEM summer camp program. So now we're part of that.
That's
so
really cool.
They do the marketing. They reach, do the outreach to the kids and the parents, and then they sign up the kids. And, you know, we did 25 kids last summer in August, just a week before airport days, which was Labor Day weekend in September. It was a pretty busy August. And we're going to do that again this year. I think we're going to be late June or early July for our STEM summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those kids that we reach, the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders who are living here in the community, and they will never forget their experience out at the airport, and they tend to come back. We've taken several of those kids up for rides in aircraft.
I know my dad was 17 when he got his pilot's license. Yeah. And there was, you know, there's something to learning when you're young enough to still retain the information. Not saying it's harder for me, but it's not the same as when I, it's kind of like picking up a language, you know, and if you're out there and you get the immersion around just what the culture is, then more opportunity to stay.
I'd love to talk with you more about that because I am huge on youth outreach. When I got my license in the 70s, there were about 750,000 licensed pilots just in the United States. Today, there's 300 and some thousand. Why is that? You know, I mean, we really need to understand what's going on. A lot of it is regulation and super high costs associated with compliance with regulation and legal liabilities and all kinds of things. But I used to rent an airplane for less than $10 an hour, including the fuel. $10 an hour for a Cessna 150 that I used to learn how to fly in. And it was all the money I had in the world because I was only making, you know, $9 an hour in my job at the time. And I was going to school full time. However, exact same airplane now is $125 an hour. Well, you're not going to get many 17-year-olds or even college students or college-age people who are going to be able to afford that. I mean, you have to have, you know, the minimum of 40 hours of flight time. Most people have 50 or 60 before they actually get their license.
And what does it cost?
$125 an hour minimum for a 2-seat trainer right now. Yeah. And then you pay for the instructor, and you pay for all your learning materials, and you got to buy a headset, and you have to buy, I mean, it's really, it gets right out there. It used to be rough order of magnitude. I mean, when I got my license, it cost me about $3,000, okay? It's 10 or more now for anybody who's looking to get their private pilot's license. And then you go beyond that, you know, like, I've got my commercial engine, or commercial multi-engine instrument, commercial flight instructor, and all those things. You have to pay money to get all those things, you know, and it's crazy.
It seems to me that all the resources of all your senior members out there, maybe they can pull something and create a trust, a scholarship.
Yeah, I'd love to have an endowment or something, you know, that we put together, even if you start small, you know, and then have something that's available for people to throw into.
So the park and the fair and the foundation, both of which have struggled.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do propose to create one, we need to structure it to where ultimately, you know, the board can step in at some point when they become defunct or are not doing their charter. I know the Fair Board Foundation, a number of years ago, was sitting on $85,000 when we were looking at closing the fair, they were not very concerned about raising more money or appropriating those funds to where we thought it was appropriate. And that's just a tragedy. You know, there's got to be some sort of ultimate oversight by the Board of Commissioners, which is probably not, there's a reason why we didn't have it with those, so maybe it's not possible, but it was a real challenge.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I don't see the Parks Board since I've been their liaison for 6 years. I don't know that I have a single example of a tangible thing that they've actually done. So.
Well, I contacted RCC and filled out all the paperwork to establish an internship for you know, airport operations, airport management. Anybody interested in doing that? We haven't had any students bite on that, you know, yet, but it would be, you know, 10 hours a week, and it's credit that they get, you know, academic credit toward, you know, whatever degree they're working on, but it would be, you know, associated with that. So I've established that. That is out there, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Good
appreciate
party.
All your support.
Yep.
Good ideas. And I got to say, when I came on board 5 years ago, we had 1.4 FTEs, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And having four full-time employees right now is a spectacular difference and change, and the ability to get things done is exponentially greater, and I cannot imagine going back. So, you know, this discussion with Julie and with you and the rest of the board members about the potential of economic development, you know, going toward airports, I want to keep pursuing that.
Okay.
You know, and by God, maybe, you know, we'll be so successful with all this grant activity that we'll be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And moving forward with all of our capital, you know, projects, et cetera.
Yeah.
But it is it's really wonderful having a full-time administrator.
Sure.
It's just, yeah.
Like night and day.
I got an email from the Ventura County airport manager. Yeah, oh my God. They run two airports. They have 30 people on staff.
Yeah. Is that including the FBO?
No.
So
no, that's 30 county employees to run those two airports. Camarillo Airport is much busier than Grants Pass.
Yeah.
But we may catch up to them here in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
We're bigger, we're much busier and bigger and more active than Oxnard Airport, which is our second.
How are they generating revenue or?
They have a huge active base of experimental aircraft, people and FBOs and businesses. They also have, that was an Air Force base. Camarillo used to be an Air Force base, and so they had this huge installed infrastructure, which they're able to just, they own it now for nothing. So they're leasing it out, and they have all this, you know, rent-a-car companies, and there's, you know, all kinds of non-aviation related companies that have their businesses there with a parking lot and 50 employees and whatever else, and they're all tenants. They're all airport tenants.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a huge level of activity, and they're on a main connector. They're just right off of 101.
Sure.
So they have a great situation out there, and I'm not saying that they don't need 30 people, but I'm just, you know, I look at that, I go, two airports, they had 70 commercial leases. I've got 135 private and commercial leases that we manage, and that are constantly churning. I mean, there's things that change about those all the time, and man alive, I just wonder. I was thinking about writing him back and saying, hey, you know. What do you guys do?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Anyway, thanks for your time.
The last thing, and we're going to talk about here later, is I'm the liaison to the North Valley, the community
board. I am.
And I'm going to propose to the board that we start exploring the idea of a project manager for heading up the North Valley sewer system.
Okay.
I think we've made incremental progress over the last 4 years, but my biggest fear is I don't even know what we're missing. And if we didn't include airports, for example, as part of day one, step one in that final assessment, what else are we missing that I'm not even aware of? Because nobody in the county under staff has ever built a sewer system before.
Yeah.
So it's like trying to build a house and you've got nobody who's actually ever pounded the nail. And you're trying to do a really good job of thinking about everything.
It would be nice if we came up with a thoroughbred instead of a camel.
I don't want to try to save a couple of dollars and spend thousands because we messed up.
Yep.
And so I think this board, in having preliminary pre-election conversations, endorses the idea of putting our best foot forward with the right resources. And I think that they're going to endorse eventually the idea that we hire somebody to lead that project.
Well, I'll be exploring the potential of capital grant money from the airport side.
Right.
Because if we can locate a lot of those step systems inside the fence, that'll make us eligible for that infrastructure improvement. And
that's great.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, it depends on your audience. And if, when I'm talking to the FAA, they really care about safety.
Yeah.
But when I'm talking to the state, they care about economic development,
right,
commerce, jobs, that kind of thing.
So,
well, very much so. FAA is less concerned about safety and drinking water and safety and that, you know, than they are about air safety.
Right.
So there's a little nuance there, you know, about how to approach the FAA on getting them to pay for sewer systems. But, you know, pilots are full of BS. You know,
I think so the whole way, the way this happens is a partnership. And you can't just discount somebody that is not a player or a participant.
Right.
Everybody's going to have to come together on this. And it seemed as though the idea of citing the leach field at the end of the runway was kind of, oh, we'll look into it, but I don't think that's going to work out. Like,
yeah, you know, I mean, I sat in on some of the very early meetings.
I want to look at that, and only anywhere else, if that doesn't work. Because everywhere else, I can put a business on that property. Mm. I can't put that at the end of the runway.
Right.
Where you can put 5 acres of a leach field.
Yeah.
Or 7 if you have to develop it. You know, when we get 20 acres coming online from the 10 acres of Dutch Bros and the 10 acres that the county owns, that isn't in the industrial park. That 10 acres that we own isn't.
Yeah.
So was it involved in the assessment about what the capacity was gonna be? Probably not. Mm-hmm. That's a shortcoming. You're not looking
at
the future.
I think it's probably worth fleshing that out when Doug... Wadlington and everybody, we're all here for that discussion next month.
Oh, okay.
There is a discussion that's happening. Terry set that up.
Great.
Yep.
I didn't know.
We'll drag you into it.
That would be great. Yeah, I just want to, I don't want to have a board look at us and why did we include that in that?
Well, I mean, I made sure, I was really clear with Rob, because, you know, Rob's been spearheading this, and I would revisit, you know, every 6 months with him, hey, what's going on? And when it became clear that the airports had sort of fallen by the wayside in that engineering study, I started squawking, you know, and I got a hold of Rob and I said, hey, you know, we really need to do this. This is our real solution, even if there's no money in it for the airport, but I eventually want running water out there.
Yeah.
And I got to have a septic system before I can do the running water. I mean, right now, that whole airport is, some of the commercial operators have their own wells, okay? Like Carson had a well, so Pacific Aviation has that facility now. They have a well. There's a couple of wells out there.
For the commercial. Warehouse.
But we have one well that serves animal control, the whole airport terminal, the EAA hangar, and all the public activity. I mean, one well for any... Yeah, it's crazy.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. and it fails every, you know, couple of months.
And this is not Rob's main charge.
Yeah, right.
It will never be his main charge. And if it's not somebody's, it's nobody's, and then it doesn't get done. They've been talking about doing it for 20 years. And I think one of the biggest shortcomings, because the list is long, of the previous board, we're no different than we were the previous board and the previous board and the previous board, inheriting study after study after study.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we do something different. I hope so.
Excellent.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
you
very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for telling me about that meeting. I hope I'm here.
You look that up.
After it's over. Mr. Chancey, I appreciate your patience.
Not a problem.
Yeah, that's whenever I'm talking, you know. Sorry.
Maybe we should move Larry to his own general discussion. It's not your fault, Mr. Grace. We
just interesting things.
We like our airport.
Good.
Morning.
Thank you.
This is my quarter update. It was supposed to be in January, so I'm a little bit late. Apologize for that. Most of it was basically an overview of what the transit department does, kind of where we come from, where our funds come from. You're already fully aware of that.
At least I missed the most important thing. Maybe it's this chair. Commissioner Walker, you talk those things.
It's like a vortex.
I never had before. These are not absorbent.
Uh-uh.
Go ahead.
Anyway, so Commissioner Harris is very familiar with what we do. So the beginning of this was for the new commissioners. It's pretty easy read. There's one of the things that I wanted to point out that's pretty important is a lot of what we do has to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act. So there's specific services we have to provide be compliant, and what's the interesting part about being compliant is it's 100% compliant. 99% is not enough. 90% is not enough, so it's 100%. And what I mean by that is for everybody that qualifies for the service, and basically that's based on if you have a disability that prevents you from utilizing the fixed trial service in one way or another. If you qualify for that service, then we have to be 100% compliant with your request. So if somebody calls in today for 50 rides tomorrow, we have to supply 50 rides tomorrow. And it varies from day to day, so it is kind of interesting trying to schedule all that. But you do have to be compliant.
With that, is it for any purpose, or does it have to be medical? Or?
Nope, it's for any purpose. And you can't supply or constrict services based on trip purpose, so it doesn't matter what it is. We open up the service to those over the age of 62 as well. Not all agencies do that, but we do that here just because there's various reasons that we would.
Tied to Social Security or retirement age, so therefore same benefits.
Pretty much, and you find people that apply that are over the age of 62 that would be eligible for the paratransit service, but the difference is to be compliant with paratransit or this ADA requirement, you have to have medical verification. And what we found is a lot of people, especially lower income or with fixed incomes, doctors charge for those services. So if they come in and they're like, hey, I need this form filled out so I can use this paratransit service or door-to-door stuff, doctors are charging people for that, so we do open it up to those over the age of 62 to just to give them that option so they don't have to pay. So that service is a requirement on 3/4 mile on each side of the fixed route, so that's how the crow flies. It's not how the roads go. So because we have one route that goes down Redwood Avenue, that actually 3/4 mile applies to this side of the river. So it puts a large mobile home community within our 3/4 mile area. So even though there's no fixed route over in that community, they're eligible just because they're within that buffer area. So
they're eligible within the 1/4 mile, or they're not eligible?
They are. Okay. They are. And so that service is, it's anywhere within that 3/4 mile service. So essentially it's the entire city of Grants Pass within the UGB. Typically, I'd have to look at a map, and stretches out Redwood Avenue, and also, like I said, across the river to Little River Road. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So it does stretch us out, and those rides are provided. They have to call a day in advance. And it's not 24 hours in advance. It's specifically by statute a day in advance. That means all the way up until 5 o'clock today we're booking rides for tomorrow. So it is interesting, and like I said, we also offer fixed route services and commuter services, and we don't have to supply this demand response service for our commuter route, which is lucky because our commuter route is all the way to Medford, all the way to Cape Junction, all the way to Wolf Creek. So you can imagine if we had to supply that service, that would be all we would do. So the other thing is the funds that we receive are specifically earmarked for the general public or elderly and disabled transportation services or capital projects. They can't be used for any other source. So by the funding source that we get them from, that's what they have to be designated for. So just to quickly go over our ridership, our fixed route ridership last year was about 182,000. That's about 730 boardings daily.
Why do you think it went down?
I have a feeling it had to do with multiple reasons. Gas prices, RCC's attendance wasn't as high as it was the prior year. Ultimately, unless you are truly transit dependent, you will find a long-term option because we operate Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And the significance of that is, for example, New Year's. We were closed on New Year's. So after that, after New Year's, we were closed 2 more days because of snow. So if you were dependent on transit, that means the last day that you received service was Friday. So that means you had no transportation for Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. That's a significant gap in your ability to get out and get within the community. So long term, that's what you're going to see. People just will move to other sources if they have an ability to do that. The comparison is of those 182,000 rides, our demand response services, which I was just talking about, are a little under 16,000 per year, and they actually went down which is a good thing because those rides actually rode three times the cost, or actually 6 to 7 times the cost of what it would cost for a bus ride. So I'm not disappointed to see those that reduction. Where those are going is essentially those rides are transferring from that demand response service to our fixed route service because our fixed route service is 50 cents. A demand response ride is $2 one way. So there's an economic incentive for them to go. And the other thing that we tout is you don't have to call in advance to book a ride. You can take transportation at your pleasure, essentially when you want to take the ride. You're not booking it, and people gravitate toward it based on that, as long as you have a good fixed route system, which I think we do. The other ones are just basically, the other items that I talked about are basically programs that we're dealing with or moving forward through. We have a transit master plan, which is essentially our equivalent of a transportation system plan that a county or city would prepare. It's supposed to go up through, it's supposed to mimic the transportation system or transportation plan for the NPO, so it's supposed to go up 35 years. We're in the process of doing that now. We had a core design workshop that we came up with three different route designs or system designs. I'll be bringing those to the board probably within, I'm hoping, a month when they release the report. There's a preliminary current conditions report that will go with that. So that's supposed to be done by June of 2017. That's the deadline, or it's the goal for the deadline, so we'll see how close we get to that. The other couple things I have going, we have an AVL, we have a software project that we're going to get going on here. It's going to be able to track our vehicles in real time. We'll be able to push that to the internet so the general public can see it, as well as our dispatchers. That does several things for us. We'll be able to eliminate a lot of radio contact, which is what we do now. So our system's built on transfers, so there are time point transfers throughout the city. So we have to call and find out where the vehicles are. So if we're able to eliminate a lot of that radio traffic, that's going to be great for our office because that's something that we don't have to do. Currently, somebody calls in and they're like, where's Route 10? I'm at Walgreens. It's like, okay. Then we have to put down the phone and get on the radio and see where they're at. So
you have to know.
We'll just be able to look and tell. So that'll be a screen in our office that everyone will be able to look at. The other thing is you'll be able to access it with a smartphone or a desktop or something like that.
You wouldn't have to call.
We'll never do anything, right? Wow. So the main thing I wanted to talk about is this transit vehicles. I ordered 2 vehicles. They're on order now. So they're coming in. They're like our mid-sized blue vehicle. The reason I purchased those is just because I had to turn the fleet over. There's a life expectancy on the fleet. And when it starts to get above that life expectancy, you need to turn them over. We are moving to vehicles that have a 12-year life expectancy. And just to let the board know, this is something I've been talking about. I'm getting further and further into my investigation of electric vehicles. It's something that I think is probably something that we will pursue. They are more expensive, but over the life of the vehicle, you'll recuperate that cost. It's been proven time and time again. I do have an application through the NPO for 2 electric vehicles, and those will be 2019 is when those funds become available. So by 2019, I will definitely have it completely ironed out. The main thing with the electric vehicles or the attractiveness to me is, and this has been proven out, is we will probably estimate saving $800 to $1,000 a month per vehicle on reduced fuel costs. That's significant for a small department that doesn't have enough local match to access all their federal funds. And 1 vehicle is $1,000, but if I end up with 2 or 3, you know, that is getting up there. One of the things that we're exploring with the electric vehicles is getting the power company to pay for the charging stations. That's probably going to happen. There's another grant program out there through the state that's being in the process of being worked on now with this, the federal settlement with Volkswagen. So some of that money came to the state, and the state is probably going to dedicate it or put it into programs for electric vehicles. That would be infrastructure, charging stations, stuff like that. So as we're looking through this, it's kind of a fluid event.
We had a pretty robust conversation this morning, Scott, about the high power bill, and that would certainly be my biggest concern. The second concern is that you have somebody within the fleet who can service those vehicles.
Correct.
Cost-benefit analysis of hiring somebody to just service two buses when the rest of our fleet is either a diesel or gas-based is a real challenge, and I don't expect us to move all that much more. You know, we have very few, actually, just general transportation of people vehicles outside of York. We mostly are, you know, parks department is a user, the public works in general. They're not light duty. They're more of a heavier duty type of thing. The assessor's office has a few cars that they use, but they assess in a lot of rural areas too, so they need a kind of a more diverse vehicle. So that would be something that I definitely want to consider. And then how do we, it's not that it is a no, it's just how do you mitigate that?
Right.
And I was talking to some people about the ability to use the solar panels to offset their utility bills every month, and the payback period is pretty good.
It is.
It's getting a lot better. So figuring out a way that we put solar panels on the roof of the public works facility, so then they're charging or selling power back to the grid every day, and then when you're, you know, coming in to charge up in the evenings, you're not having to buy all the power that you. So trying to figure out.
It's something that I've actually already gone into. So I've actually talked to Pacific Power over in Medford to their main office and talked about off-peak power use and that kind of thing. And that's exactly what we would do is we would pull off-peak. And by off-peak, we're talking like 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, all the way to like 3 in the morning.
Right.
The other thing with the infrastructure in terms of the mechanics, granted, the salesman will tell you whatever you want to hear.
Right.
So they say, oh, well, we can train your mechanics to do this. Well, in reality, I'm talking to other agencies that have gone this route. It's not quite as cut and dried as that. A lot of the agencies, you'll see these manufacturers move into the same cities that they're going to 100% electric vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
How convenient. So now they have their own technical staff come over anytime there's a problem. So there's a lag time in that.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've...
And in a rural area, we're not going to get that kind of response.
No, I would imagine. No, we won't. The good thing is there's a electric battery manufacturer in the Rogue Valley that most people don't know about. Their name is Bramo. Anyway, so I have been talking to them to find out what kind of things we need. Some agencies.
That's in conjunction with the motorcycle electric.
They've sold the motorcycle over to Bombardier.
Right.
And so they're focusing now on power sources, which is batteries and linking batteries together. So there's that component of the maintenance. The rest of it remains the same.
Okay.
And then just quickly, just to let you know, because somebody has actually asked about this, what would it take? What would a solar array take to charge a vehicle? In Porterville, California, has gone 100% electric, or looking at 100% electric, and they're thinking, and they're actually going to do it, 15 acres of solar panels is what it would take to put enough power into the grid to charge an electric vehicle.
One electric vehicle or a fleet?
One electric vehicle is like 15 acres of solar panels today.
That's ridiculous.
They're going to do it. Which is, I found interesting, which is also interesting because they went to 100% compressed natural gas 5 years ago, and now they're going to electric. So apparently...
That is curious because we've been talking about natural gas or propane as an option with some of our public works vehicles.
With the public works vehicles, it is an option because to go to propane, you can get a conversion kit. You can't get a conversion kit for our vehicle. So when I look at this with the CNG versus electric, you don't get the savings that you see with electric versus CNG. Plus, with CNG, you're up at like $2 to $3 million for a compression facility.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's what I was thinking. There's a lot to explore.
And Avista has said that they would either partner, pay for that facility over here, just like what they did in White City. I've talked to Stevenson about that, so don't let that be a inhibitor.
Yeah, I'm not.
I see in my experience in the electric utility industry, there's probably more volatility in the electric rates than there is in the natural gas.
There is.
I think, you know, that our system right now is 50% dependent on coal in the nation. Ours is not in the Northwest. It's more probably like 25% because we're 53% hydro. But I just see as they scrutinize, you know, we still got these RMP resource, renewable portfolio standards, and they're increasing those every time. And it puts a greater burden on, you know, the carbon tax that the state just passed and stuff. But you can still comply with that by going to natural gas. I just, if it were me, just back of the envelope, I would be very cautious about going to electricity.
I am very cautious. I'm one of those ones that's just, I've seen agencies go down these roads and be the first, and you don't want to be the first if you're an agency this size.
Can't afford it.
No, you can't, and I've watched agencies get burned like that.
Yeah.
Especially when they, well, in the beginning when they started to go to CNG, but I do, we do have a consortium of agencies from Washington, Oregon, all the way down into California. We're trying to pick
they're
a
all.
And we're all talking. We all talk once a month.
Great.
And some of the things that they tell me are not the same as the things that the manufacturers tell me, so I'm appreciative to have that resource.
Oh, but definitely.
Yes, I'm definitely cautious. Good. I'm not just going to jump blindly into this thing, and all the concerns that you have,
okay,
I've been looking at them.
Great.
So
no doubt.
That's pretty much it. The transit hub. We haven't done anything. I'm still waiting to hear from ODOT as soon as they verify that the enhancement funds are available, which is like 2019. But as soon as they can get me an agreement or a signed contract saying, yeah, these funds are here, so we'll probably do something and move forward ahead of time.
So there's a couple areas that if I could put on my wish list of things to include in our transit system. Ultimately, I would love to see weekend services as well as extended to 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
Or to midnight if the that we have basically day shifts, but anybody working alternative shifts, there's not options for them. And right. One of the keys of that is RCC has classes that go to 9, 10 o'clock at night, and those folks can't get back in.
Right.
So for some of our students. The other thing is we don't have anything out Williams Highway. And so Walgreens is as far out as we go out at 238. So the Murphy, New Hope, Williams areas are all under utilized, and so those are kind of my wish list items. You know, at some point, I would love to see a direct route from RCC to White City RCC is another wish list item, but I, especially if we start looking at more trades being taught or focused on potentially, but those are wish lists long term, but those are areas I see that would be, you know, something to potentially
support. I 100% agree. Just to let you know, those are all on my list as well. Also, don't forget that even though we go, Walgreens is essentially as far off as we go that way with the fixed route, you can still get another 3/4 mile out with the demand response service. So we do take in, there's some medical facilities that are further out there. We do get out there. It just comes down to resources. So do we spread ourselves thinner now, or do we just try to find something? And then as far as RCC to White City, I was getting ready to do that with the commuter line, but we do operate into another jurisdiction. So there's some particulars there. But, yeah, all on the list.
I hear you.
Duly noted.
Advertising?
I haven't done any more advertising other than what's going on the television right now. And we do advertise. We did get our commercials translated, so they're running on the equivalent of TV El Mundo on,
okay,
I don't remember which station it is.
Radio?
No radio. No radio. No social media. Anything like that. It's still something that's out there. I've thought about something needs to get done, but I need to sit down and put together more of a comprehensive package.
We're entertaining a proposal from Moving Mountains PR firm on the 23rd. We're going to have a conversation with them about a proposal they submitted about a year ago that the previous board wasn't going to entertain. I think yours is a huge low-lying fruit for the social media. And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money, but these people do it for a living, and they're going to keep you out of the challenges. And I know that one example of a client that they just took on a couple of months ago has basically taken over a certain area of social media in Josephine County. And, you know, I applaud your hesitance you know, just very, very, you don't want to ask for everything and get it.
Right.
And then you're just overwhelmed. But I do see that there's capacity within the system to accommodate more people. And my drive, you know, moving out to the Williams area, could be one of those things that, that just is an extension of what you're going to see as far as clients. And so I'd like to see this year as kind of embracing that a little bit more as a focus. And I'd encourage you to, if you have the time, to come in on the 23rd for that meeting. I think it's in the afternoon at 2. It's tough for me to memorize everything as it goes.
This month?
Yeah, it'll be right before I go to D.C., so it's going to be a general discussion at 2 o'clock. Can't see that.
I'll see what my calendar is. It's something I'm interested in. Like I said in the past, RVT had offered to help us with our social media and getting it moving forward, and it's something I haven't taken them up on. And the main reason I haven't is there's two, in my experience and what I've heard from some of my peers, there's two sides to the social media. It's almost, it can be a negative thing if you don't have the time to monitor and respond to it.
Yeah.
Because it can kind of get out of control on certain things. And I just don't have, I didn't have the time, but I think at this point it's something that, it's definitely out there, and I'm getting closer and closer to being able to do something.
I think one of the things that the consultant would advise is that you set up that expectation of when you are able to respond ahead of, you know, from the beginning. When you launch it, that on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 is when I'm going to set aside a couple of hours to take a look at this, so that people, when they ask their question, they already know that they're, it's okay, I'm going to have to wait until Tuesday, or whatever you decide to do.
A half an hour,
you know, from 4:30 to 5, or whatever. I think they're okay with that delay, as long as they have an expectation that at some point there's a possibility that I'm going to get. And that those are things that I've never really come up with, that it's the consultant saying, and maybe they advise you to do it differently. They're going to know. And what I'd just like to do is kind of set the county's priorities. We can't address every social media opportunity, but if they say your low-hanging fruit is transit, parks, and the fair, we start with that. And we roll it out, kind of test the waters. And then we include animal control, the board's office, and other things as they come up. So, yeah,
that's
a nice
idea.
Really great.
And just an FYI, with the snowstorms that were happening in the beginning of January, we did I started using our Twitter account. I've had it since 2009. We just never use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, okay, because all these people were calling.
Yeah.
Are you going to be open tomorrow? Are you open tomorrow? And we're like, we don't know. We don't know what's going on. So we started using it. And I think we had, 3 followers, but at least it's out there.
I posed a question last night at 9:21 on people's power bills, just throwing it out there. And right now, I've had over 80 responses.
Wow.
People are commenting. Number of views is probably in the hundreds, maybe 1,000. I've got 2,200 friends on here. Facebook is the one that I see that if you want a message to get out, and that was, you know, 9:30 last night to 9:30 this morning, not the most opportune time for people to be looking, but it's amazing. I think you can control and get information out like that to a lot of people, because it just spreads so fast.
Well, I like that you guys are looking at doing that online program that people can say. Just spending time on transit systems in other communities. And those that have electronic notification or even something on the stop, this is when the next bus is arriving. This is, it takes all the confusion out of it. I'm lost. I don't know how to do it. And, I've been in it. Like Anaheim Transit System, you have to text and you get a schedule of the next bus, but it's not always telling you if it's northbound or southbound and this and that. And it causes more confusion sometimes than what you're going for. So I like that you can see in real time. So that's encouraging. And but I do think that one of the things you're talking about with the electric and all that, I'm finding is having a hybrid, that the batteries and the maintenance of the batteries, that cost is an unknown that is higher than, you know, it could be cost preventative for replacement of batteries and cost there. So that was one of those things that if there's feedback that you're getting from some of those other items, that would be one of those, because holy mackerel, $300 battery versus I'm used to an $80 battery, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, on the real-time vehicle tracking, the reason I've waited so long is because the technology was unproven and it was very expensive. Mm. So now it's gotten smaller, cheaper, more affordable, and a better platform. But yeah, I have been talking to other agencies about their battery life, and the interesting part about this is no one's had them in service long enough to actually test it.
Yes.
So we'll see. But yeah, the battery pack's at $100,000, and the manufacturer will say, well, that's today's cost. You're like, well, how long will it last? Well, we don't know. Well, okay, can you give me an idea? Well, it might be...
What's it going to cost to recycle that?
Exactly. And then they'll just say, well, we'll swap it out with ours. Or we'll sell you a new pack and swap it out. Okay, how much is that going to cost? We don't know because the technology, and it's just like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
So we're kind of waiting and seeing. We're right there at the edge where people are going to have to start replacing batteries and things like that, and we will see how much that costs. So
the other thing is you might just, you know, it might be more, but if you were allocated CMAQ funds that you can't spend any other way than building $100,000 bus shelters,
right.
I think I'd rather invest those in electric vehicles if that's
I would tend to agree, and it's there's a lot of agencies that are pushing it
more than
way.
Not sure if you were even on the calendar.
Oh, I was.
Yeah, good time.
It was. We don't. Never mind. I'll be quiet.
So, do you have any specific questions?
No, okay. I think excellent.
One more question.
Oh, yep.
Where is the status of the hub station change or whatever it is?
The way that it's sitting right now is those funds aren't available until 2019 through the enhancement, ODOT enhancement program.
Okay.
What the plan is once those are 100% guaranteed, looking at using some road reserve funds or something like that to start the process and then reimburse those when the grant funds become available so we don't have to wait until 2019. Just do some of the engineering and stuff like that to get the project moving forward.
I've had some folks ask about the potential of getting one of the flashing warning systems, the crosswalks. We recently have one on, the city put one in on G Street by the Mission where they had some problems. There's one by Grants Pass High School.
We've asked ODOT to do that about 4 years ago. They did an assessment and didn't find that there was enough or merited. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
I
watch it every day that somebody has a challenge there. There isn't a place that I can see in Josephine County where there's more people going back and forth.
And I would say that our ridership has increased than 4 years ago, so it might be worth revisiting. But my response at the time was, well, if we're moving the hub, is there going to continue to be a need here?
Yes.
And, well, even me coming down last week, the buses were double stacked into the first lane and blocking traffic. And I'm like, that's not appropriate. And so it's just kind of one of those things that it was just curious where the hub status is, because if you can't even drive by because you got a bus parked in the middle of the lane and there's no time frame how long, it's not like you saw people walking across the parking lane to get on the bus and then it stopped, and how long is that bus going to still be there? You know, so they're waiting for whatever time they have to leave.
Well, there's situations they can't keep driving around the block, you know, waiting for a spot to open up.
Right. The minute I can get out of there, I will. It is such a hassle for us. I mean, we do our best to mitigate trying to keep buses from coming and stacking like that, but sometimes you just can't avoid it.
Yeah.
So it is an ODOT facility, so it's entirely up to them. But I know that they are looking at it. So... if I hear from them again, which I'm sure I will definitely put in that, throw that out there.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what's the...
Dan needs to carry that to the RV Act.
That's fine. And so even that light would go through, because I was wondering if the city had the ability, since it's in their jurisdiction, to ask as well.
No.
Or at least request ODOT to do it.
I don't even think they have authority over the sidewalk. That's the light pole.
Okay.
States.
That works for me.
No.
So we can definitely bring it to their attention.
Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I need to take a minute break or two and keep going at this since 8, if you don't mind. I'd like to just put in recess for a minute or two. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
We're back in session at 10:28. We've got other business or financial report and business update from Mr. O'Hare.
Thank you.
Thanks for your patience.
Got one item. Well, I do have a question. Is did Commissioner DeYoung get to sign the PWA contracts? Good. Thank you.
Mr. Morgan and I don't think you've done it yet, but we will.
So what I have here is, last 2 weeks ago I handed out the budget. One for Commissioner DeYoung. I handed out the last year's budget goals and directives. The budget goals are pretty broad, and they're specific to the budget process. They're not necessarily department goals or the specific things the board wants to accomplish within itself, but they're rather broad goals applicable to the budget process itself. As you can see, the three of them that have been in place, the improve outreach and communication by investing in technology to improve efficiencies and provide enhanced service, sustainable plan for all mandated and essential services, and provide access in a transparent, open manner. I would like to be able to get these goals and directives out to the departments as soon as possible, within the next week or so. Again, I guess I'm trying to say that the budget goals do not necessarily have to be the specific goals that the board wants to accomplish this next year, but rather in the preparation of the budget process, we want to see where the departments are providing for essential services or having open access or trying to be in a transparent manner. So I'd encourage the discussion to move these forward.
Board present for this, yeah. And I know we did when you handed those out mm-hmm. a week or so ago,
mm-hmm.
But we really haven't had a chance to discuss them. I think this is a great foundation to start from.
Yes.
A lot of these have been on the books for a little while,
yeah.
And probably something, you know, you, Rosemary, and I developed 5 years ago, but
correct.
It might be, I think, really beneficial to have fresh eyes take a look and
freshen them up a bit. Yeah.
You know, these are good, but there's one or two that might work in here really well too. So I think if the staff could communicate, you could communicate that to Commissioner DeYoung.
Sure.
Yes. About that we're going to look at revisiting this issue. Unfortunately, the schedule's really tight next week, and I don't know that it's appropriate to try to get that done. Ideally, I'd like it done before the end of the month, but I'm not here until March 2nd. But I could be prepared for sure to address it when I get back from D.C. and then ready to send out, you know.
Well, in light of that, of your schedule,
3 weeks,
I put...
Well, and the departments are supposed to submit their budgets to finance by May 17th. That doesn't give them much time to get the directives.
If you look at the second page...
May 17th or March
17th? March. I didn't get the May, sorry.
If you look at the second page, I have a budget calendar, which those are the same dates that I've incorporated into the budget directives on the first page, but it gives it in a more concise, here's the calendar and here's the dates. So on that second page, again, this is a proposed calendar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the final. It's up to the board to say, yes, we think that we can work within that, or no, the schedules are such that we need to move these things. The main bottom line line that cannot be crossed is that the budget has to be adopted before June 30. We can't spend money on July 1 unless we have an adopted budget. So working backwards from that, this time frame gives us some breathing room to address any issues that could occur.
We have a tremendous amount of time built into this schedule.
We do. We're looking at budget committee meetings in April, end of April, beginning of May. But we have some unknowns in there too that we need to be able to.
Yeah.
So what my hope was is that we could get, if you want to put it this way, you know, get rid of the pigeon, get rid of the standard things, the parks, the fairgrounds, the departments that won't be affected in any way mm-hmm. Through a levy. But build in time to say if there passes, then we have an opportunity to address
absolutely.
That as the budget committee.
Which we've done before.
We've done that before. So that would put us then to the beginning of June as far as the adopted budget, given this calendar. It can be consolidated and tightened up.
but
well,
this is first draft.
A great start. There's some considerations for me personally. I know my schedule that I won't be here to review on the March 27th that week, the 24th through the 2nd of April. So I'd like to try to accommodate that as
sure.
best I can. This is their first budget formally with Mr. Morganson, but only from a program level, not maybe from the full county.
And theoretically, what happens between February 20 and March 17 is that's when the liaisons and the department heads get together to act in the crafting of the budget. After the budget's compiled, then that's when I discuss with the budget, with the Board of Commissioners themselves, you know, here's the completed budget, here's the balanced budget, is there anything that we need to look at, tweak, adjust?
So there's, go ahead.
Just looking at the date, April 20th, Budget Committee meeting, Dan and I both have County College in Washoe County.
Oh, okay.
The next day. I'm not sure what the drive time to Washoe County is.
Not short.
Yeah. Which means that there's a chance we may have to leave the night before.
Right.
Which, if there's a meeting until 6 p.m., would preclude that from happening. Yeah. So just wanted to put that one on the...
I think that's a really good point. I think we should break this up into, like, you know, what are the things and those things. So the May 16th, we know that we want to have a budget hearing after that. So that's a for sure. The election happens. I don't know that you have to wait 10 days, but we do have to have it certified.
And
we have a 9-day certification time, but I think we're going to know the general outcome.
I was thinking more of giving sheriff and public safety time to say, okay,
this is
what it really is going to look like. I mean, they could have it ready ahead of time, but...
Well, they probably will.
Probably
but the
will.
Board wouldn't have given... The board may not have given specific direction.
That's a pretty quick turnaround, you know, on Wednesday morning to say on Thursday present...
Yeah,
budget, so.
That makes sense. I like that delay. That does make a lot of sense.
Now, traditionally, we've had Thursdays, but we've done Tuesday. Last year, we did the budget committee wanted to accelerate the process, so they met Thursdays and Tuesdays the next week and Thursday of the next week. The theory being that the departments have balanced budgets that they're ready to present. So whatever you want to hear, there's no real need to make it a week between each meeting. You could accelerate that, or you could say instead of Thursday, let's do them on Tuesdays.
Well,
You've got other.
Without Dan meetings. Here, we're really this is
sure
preliminary. Yeah. I think we can
exactly
get the things that we can define. The budget meetings, let's hold off on that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything past the 16th election sounds really pretty good to me. We just need to make sure that we've got a full board. We don't have to advertise for. Budget committee person.
Nope, we're good to go.
So when are you planning? So let's work back from taking the budget committee meetings out and when we can do this. So the board needs a time between to set the ISF rate, the bomb rate, the insurance and fleet. Those are all important things to do that I think should be. Do we send those out with the directives? I mean,
you
can't really be doing anything until you know that the ISF rate is.
No, the directives we send out ahead of time. Last time we sent out on the 12th, the budget directives, goals and directives. And then, like we see here, the week of the 13th, which is next week, we'll prepare the Schedule D's, which is the payroll, the personnel, which is just current. This is what you're currently doing. Send it out to the departments. And then the following week, the week of the February 20th, we would send out the rates for ISF, bomb, insurance, fleet. So that gives them the department should already be working on their standard, you know, what do we think is going to happen next year. But they are dependent on us to say, this is what the fleet rate is going to be the changes. This is what the bomb rate is, the insurance costs that you're going to be hit with. So those things are kind of, they're dependent on us to let them know. And it might end up tweaking their budget a bit.
There's two issues in there that will maybe move a little. Insurance might as well. But the ones that I know of is if the ISF may be impacted by the passing of the levy.
Yes.
And the fleet rate might be impacted by the review that we're contracting to have happen. I would say that the fleet rate probably wouldn't change. We would probably do a mid-year adjustment because it would take time to implement whatever it is that the recommendation is.
And my theory,
but I wouldn't want to wait a full year to do an adjustment if it was something.
But hopefully it'll go down. So that would be the theory.
Go up.
And ISS as well, potentially, if the levy passed.
So it would just be more resources back to
available back to the departments, yes.
So not major. So we would set the ISF rate. Nothing really has changed. It would probably remain the same. Our bomb rate was projected last year to go from 62 to 65 cents.
Yeah, correct.
I know that Ryan wants 70. What I've told his directive in the past, and it's unfortunate that Commissioner Morgan has had DeYoung isn't here. Ryan does a really good job of keeping his budget tight and really low. It is not his. I don't want to have him cut staff, you know, go to one ply toilet paper because he doesn't have the resources in his budget because he doesn't get to, it's not like he can go out and try to find new revenues for that. He's still working on energy efficiency things, but it's people putting in heaters in things in their offices or whatever that cut into his, he pays for all of the utilities and we set that rate a year in advance. And we don't know what it's going to be
nine
months later. And he just has to deal with it. But I told him, I said, that's what the budget, that's what the general fund reserve is for, mm-hmm. is that stuff that's unexpected. We just do a really good job. And a budget's just an estimation of what you're going to do in that year. It's not hard and fast. So I'm prepared to endorse the idea of setting it at 65 cents. But if he comes to us mid-year and says, man, these electric rates are way higher than I expected, or we have unallocated space, no longer paying, you know, we need to accommodate for that.
It's a major, that major we failure don't. In one of the buildings or something, you know, so I don't
yeah.
need some, yeah. The other thing that I guess I'm asking
so are you
too,
comfortable with, you know, entertaining that idea?
Which specific one?
The one that Ryan's budget will be, his bomb rate is 65 cents.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to take out that general fund need, you move it to 70 cents, and then he has a reserve within his own budget. I don't need him to have a reserve within his own budget. He needs to operate tight, which mm-hmm. is 65 cents. The reserve for his budget is the general fund reserve.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he doesn't need to have a reserve in his budget. It's the way I've wanted to.
No, because if there's something big enough that comes up, it probably needs to come to us anyhow.
It would.
Or to you
yeah.
as the liaison.
Okay. That's where I'm at.
So here's a $20 question. Does the BCC move from ISF regardless of whether we have a levy or not? So if I'm crafting a budget pre-levy, which I am, and the budget would be no new revenue, which it will, so I leave BCC within ISF at this point in time.
The reason that's the case is because the budget that you're going to be crafting, the sheriff is going to be crafting, his revenues are dependent on general fund allocation.
Right.
His budget will not be dependent on general fund allocation if the levy passes.
Correct.
The whole formula changes if the levy goes forward.
Okay.
I understand the political of saying, well, you say you're going to do this, but you're not doing it now. We're not doing a lot of things that
right.
are going to change if the levy passes.
It's not reflected in the
that's
budget.
That's just
yeah.
one element mm-hmm. that will drastically change if the levy passes. That other budget for the jail looks dramatically different without the city contract, which we said we're not going to do. Without general fund allocation to the jail, the way it can't be structured. All of those things are going to change, and the ISF will change.
Also.
Okay.
That's good.
I've thought about this. You can't build it with part of it and not build it with all of it. And it's the way we operate. It's the way we operate. If it changes, then it changes.
Then we'll change. Yeah.
And we'll have to make that accommodation. ISF will likely go down with $6.9 million of new revenues.
Yes.
We don't need $690,000 of new appropriations for the ISF.
Right.
It might be up another position in HR and in finance, but that could be it.
Yeah.
Maybe one else in IT, but that isn't $700,000. So the rate will go down to 7 or 8%, reflective of the need in the ISF, especially if the board is pulled out at that point.
Mm-hmm.
it might go down to what the sheriff is requesting at 5-7%, somewhere around there.
No.
And honestly, I mean, with two of us here, there's nothing's going to change because there's just one. But I have I think if we say we're going to do it, we should do it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if we pull ourselves out of ISF, then it's not a question of will we. It's we said we were going to do it, we do it. And so I would counter that. I would want us to be pulled out either way. But with
well,
different opinions.
Well, you're only planning on sending $2 million to public safety in the proposed budget. See how it impacts? You can't just make a decision. And then we're doing a reduction in the jail. And they're not doing 130 beds anymore. With a $500,000 reduction, they're only doing the 85 or something like that. It has ramifications that are
it does. I mean, it has more of a conversation. This is kind of where I come from. Of you have 6 years of experience of knowledge of the impacts. I want to have those conversations of what are those ramifications
exactly.
So I can get to that.
Do you see the ripple?
If you pull 540,000 the BCC budget out of ISF and you work that back to how much is that really impacting the sheriff's budget directly, we're looking at about 125,000. So of that, because public works, public health, adult corrections, everybody's contributing to ISF, not just the sheriff, you know. And really, of the public safety fund, the sheriff is only one piece because the DA has his piece, you know, juvenile has their piece. So when you do the math, take it all the way back, the actual impact to sheriff budget is around 125,000 of that 540 that we removed from ISF.
Because the other piece is if you pull them out, the ISF rate goes down, therefore there's back money in the account. So it's a matter of maybe lesser. But I don't want to make that call without saying, what is the impact?
Yeah, let's take a look at it. You bet. So I think it's there is some discussion. But. So, okay, I just wanted to get that out there, to get that in the queue, and make sure that we're moving forward on that. So I'll follow back up with or maybe we can look at a Tuesday discussion or something, general discussion.
We'll work it out with the staff to get it on the schedule.
Okay, very good.
Make it work.
That's all I have.
I think when you're doing your thing, just... My thought is that you're using proposed rates for ISF bomb insurance. Just putting that word proposed in there because they may be subject to change.
Okay.
I think that's a prudent position to put it in. I'd like you to have a couple of agenda items that you bring for general discussion, Arthur, and organize if paying for the Selmac Lake Dam project. The board needs to kind of come to grips with that, how we're going to pay for that. The lease, Mike Watson's already working on revenues from leases. What I'm looking for is how do we pay for his position long term. And there's no real guiding policy about property management revenues from leases, or we do have one for property sales. 10% or so goes into covering those services from all the property sales. But we don't have a policy guiding all the others. And now that we have a property manager, he's been here for a while, we have no shortage of workload for him. I need to look at starting to pay, find ways to pay for his position and consolidate all properties because the county is liable for all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Rosemary's jumping for joy at hearing me say this, but it's time that we address that. Mike's working on it. I'd like you and Mike to kind of come together and talk about all the properties that we have and figuring out a way to.
Well, I like that because they're scattered about. Just because we put a cell tower on a piece of forestry land doesn't mean it's forestry revenue. It should be county revenue. So those kinds of things.
Have all of those elements
kind
of outlined that have been festering out there for quite some time and figure out a way that we make a definitive policy, codify it in an order, and this is what we're doing.
Okay. Well, good.
Direct deposits of all checks. So we had a mishap or what have you, and so we did paper checks, which I really appreciate. But at the end of the day, we all get that for reimbursement for travel, and it seems as though I just like it teased out whether or not those can be done electronically.
Yep.
I'd like to agree with that. Just to get it all consistent.
Now, are you talking about not just paychecks, but you're talking about accounts payable
correct checks?
Yeah.
To employees.
Employees.
Yeah. You already have the direct deposit information because of paychecks.
Would that be helpful? Would that be?
There's costs involved in the direct deposit, but let me look.
Okay. I can get that. The other one is a progress report on the bi-monthly paycheck policy. So for the public, currently we have about 330 employees. The current employees have an option of having a mid-month pull draw on their paycheck, and 160 or so are taking advantage of that option.
Yeah.
And so it's roughly half, or almost exactly half. It seems like an additional step. There's a rectification that has to happen at the end of the month. It's challenging in my mind. I would like to see the county pick one or the other. We really don't want to disadvantage those county employees who are already doing that. I think the county employees who are not can accommodate two monthly paychecks. There are people who may disagree, but I really want to lean into this.
It took me a while to get to one a month and get used to what is my budgeting for one a month. And
as a cost-saving measure to the county, that's my number one priority. Convenience to employees for their fiscal management strategy is, I wouldn't say secondary.
Well, and honestly, if you're looking at twice a month, then look at getting it off of the 7th of the month and going to an every other Friday or something like that.
That's exactly what it would be. But we're also looking, I think just a quick stat on that is around 70% of businesses are biweekly, every 2 weeks. Only 6% are monthly. So I think if you look at the vast majority of businesses, it's not a monthly.
It wasn't easy. It took me...
Yeah.
Get my tax return. Okay, now I don't need that draw. And I mean, it took the planning for me to get to.
Yeah.
But now on once a month, I know that I pay all my bills on the first of the month, and the 7th of the month.
7th of the month. Yeah, it is challenging, but
rent's due the first. It's always fun to.
Yeah, you got to tell your landlord, hey, I got paid on the 7th. You know.
But yeah, we'll adjust. You just figure out which bills to pay.
Well, and we'll give plenty of time, too. This is not something that's going to be surprised overnight. We'll have at least 90 days beforehand that we'll give official notice of saying of the transition. So I think we can make it happen. There's some processes that I want to see, but that'll be part of the update. That'll be part of your status update on that.
That's a goal of mine for finance, that we explore that, and we probably implement it. I mean, the board needs to approve it, but from a fiscal reality standpoint, it's a process that I think is going to make things simpler. I can't imagine doing two different versions with a rectification.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't make sense to have two different versions.
Not good if that's not efficient. I want to explore the option... get the endorsement to explore the option for the North Valley Sewer District project manager position. My history with things that have not been successful in the past is because somebody didn't spearhead it. The previous board, maybe the board before the previous board, endorsed the idea of getting a Demick Campus project manager. It's a $1.5 million project. It's about half or maybe a third of the size of the project for the North Valley Sewer. It is not a good use of time or efficient for our public works director, who has never built a sewer system at no fault of his own. He wasn't hired with building a sewer system. And every minute that he's spending on that North Valley sewer system project, he's not spending it managing his department. And that is not acceptable to me as the previous liaison to public works. And somebody who's looking at the shortage of revenues, and he needs to be as efficient in his program as possible. And so for me, we're going to keep kicking the can of the North Valley sewer system down the road, and eventually, that gentleman who just walked by was working on this project 15 years ago, and so I want to get it done in my lifetime, let alone my term, And the only way to do that that I've seen is to test somebody within the county to do it, or we hire somebody. I can't think of anybody in the county to do it. In fact, I wouldn't recommend that. Go hire somebody who's built one of these every day of the week. That's just what they do.
I can tell you from my experience with the Sobering Center, that was something that I wish we had had on play from day one. Some of the things that we had to go back and fix that were caught by a project manager when we finally hired one, it definitely was worth the expense. And you need a different set of eyes. There was a lot of things that were told but weren't in the paperwork. And,
right.
You know, so we had some things we had to go back and deal with. And it was recommended from the beginning. Matter of fact, the chief of police is who recommended after having dealt with another project.
Right.
And I can tell you it's beneficial. So I would support us having a project manager on any of these types of projects, whether it be Dimmock or the North Valley. So you keep saying you're the liaison, so I'm going to have to give you the packet I got from Rob so you can be the liaison. And we'll see you. So,
am I? I am not. Am I?
That's
I want
okay.
to be.
It's clearly a passion of yours, and I brought this up a week or two ago that you were, after Cajo, you said you were, and I brought it up in a meeting
That's
saying,
right.
Hey, are you, is this economic development or is this
the
public work?
Yes.
And so I just want to bring up that
if you wouldn't mind, I would like to take that over. I
see that you want to get this project done, and so long as it's this project, I think that's appropriate. And in the future,
your airport interests are going to be included to the nth degree.
I'm okay with that. But to me, I've managed to be out of all economic development liaisons. I don't know how I did that, but
there will be a
because
there will
I have
be
an
a
interest
date soon
in
where you're going
that.
To be able to. And there's no just because
yeah,
I'm
so,
doing that.
So I'm going to make a motion that the Merlin North Valley Sewer District be moved to Commissioner Hare as liaison. And
I really appreciate that.
And I will get you the packet I have not read yet from Director Brandis.
I apologize for my passion spilling over into other people's jurisdiction. But if it comes from
I'm okay.
6 years of history of this
yeah.
just
I want to see the project get done, and clearly my passion is not to the level of yours is at the moment, so I'm going to allow you to take
you
that.
You had 6 years for it to fester. And your and a predecessor would say that you had an opportunity for 2 years before I got here to do something about it. Yeah, I was working on keeping the lights on in rural America.
No,
we cut $40 million in 1 year, laid off 130 people.
I'm not playing
games.
I'm
going to
keep it simple. We're at a place of getting some things done,
yeah.
being efficient, and stop pointing fingers.
Yep.
Let's just be efficient and get things done. So with that,
we will have
I
a proposal in the near future of who it is, and they're going to get us a Gantt chart of what it looks like to get it done.
So how does this work? Are we putting an RFP out to public-private contractors?
That's usually how it works. We put out an
scope
RFP.
Of work of what we're looking
mm-hmm.
for.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Are
not
you doing
time.
That for Dimmock, or are you only doing it for North Valley?
We've already done it for Dimmock. We've got Mal Foster and Alonchi, who has been the project managers on that from day one, and they've served us really, really well. They are engaged. They were down here the entire project as the project managers, making sure everything was going well. They had a staff person in the county for 6 weeks managing that project every step of the way. So they've got a portfolio of qualified people. In fact, they're at the top of my list for this project from a standpoint that they, they've expanded their portfolio since they started with the Dimmock campus into they're looking at redeveloping the paper mill up in right on the river. Everybody knows this piece of property.
Yeah.
It's a major site in the state. It's on the Willamette River, you know, something you stop off and take a look at all the water and it's an old sawmill or paper mill.
Yeah.
Paper mill. And that they're leading the charge on that. I mean they do the gamut and we'll have to put it out. Everybody will get a chance. But
you're impressed with their work so far.
I couldn't be more impressed.
Yeah.
I think they've got a quote from me on their website about the zoo I hire.
Yeah. I do, when you're done with your list, I have a question while Arco is here.
Do you have a motion?
Was it a... I don't
no,
know
I made a
ever,
motion that wasn't seconded to have you be the liaison.
I don't know that we've ever made a distinction, because I don't want to have another order or a motion to remove it at some point, but I totally endorse
it. I hear you. You can have it.
Thank you.
So I'm going to make a motion that we hire a program manager for the North Valley Sewer District project.
Project manager.
Whatever I'm...
I will definitely second that. I do want feedback, but we did... it's been moved and seconded. Further discussion, yes. We did talk to Commissioner DeYoung before he was Commissioner DeYoung about this. It's one of the lead types of programs, the projects that we need to get underway. And I think at that time he did endorse it. But there'll be an opportunity to weigh in when we go out with the RFP and the scope and all that. So I'm not afraid of not having input from him. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 2-0. Thank you very much, Commissioner Morgan. That's more progress than... That's a lot of progress right there. It seems like a small deal, but that has taken 4 years. So,
no, we hired someone local just for Sobering Center, and like I said, the leaps and bounds made a difference.
Cannabis Advisory Committee.
Yes.
Is that something you're interested in kind of?
Sure.
So putting a proposal about who would sit on that.
Okay.
We can provide the structure. Governance, all those kinds of things, by just emulating like the Rural Planning Commission. You just take that language and then you substitute out where it's applicable.
Yeah.
But we need something guiding, and it'll be an order that establishes that committee. So you'd work with legal on just taking other language and redrafting it, and then you make a proposal to the board. We sign an order, we create a committee, and then we advertise to populate it.
Okay.
That's the process. If you don't mind, I really appreciate that. I think you've got an interest, you've got an expertise in it.
Interesting for someone who's never used it. So
me neither.
All right.
Not a one. I don't know that Dan has either. All of us, born and raised,
haven't used it.
Not a one. And I grew up in IV.
I saw it in school. I remember seeing somebody passing along and, just chose not to go there, so... Okay, yesterday we talked about a letter for the legislature next week, and when we were talking, I watched body language, different things, who's responsible for what. So I saw you talking to Arthur about doing something while he was here with legal.
Yeah.
So where I'm in a spot of what I'm supposed to produce to get approval from the board before I present it on Tuesday, being that... that's just it. It's today and tomorrow is all we have to approve it because I leave Sunday.
You're going to draft a letter with Arthur and Wally to help you out with kind of like the numbers, the impact, and then you're going to be able to sign it.
Okay. So the other question is, because Lipstick is also preparing a letter that's going, so I'm just making sure that I'm presenting on behalf of the board.
You are presenting on behalf of the board. The letter that you sign is from you.
Okay.
So...
Awesome.
It'll still carry. Just got your letterhead. It'll be fine. We're good. You've got the sheriff going, which is what I wanted to say. The summit that Commissioner DeYoung has put together is not, and Sheriff Daniels and I discussed it a little bit last night, just via text. I think that's the priority. You know, there's a revenue stream that he needs to pursue, and
So the sheriff's going up on Tuesday to testify as well, and then he'll be back for the JRI summit Thursday and Friday?
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I haven't discussed that. I just mean that he's going to miss the opportunity to talk with the people who have been challenging supporters or not supporting that previous levy. So,
okay, cool.
Won't be there on Tuesday.
Okay. No. He's been asked to testify, and I think that's a priority.
And he can present the lipstick letter, so I don't have to do that. So you and I are starting from scratch. So
basic, one-page bullets. That's what they're going to respond to, is what it would mean, what would the revenues mean to Josephine County, and if we don't have the resources right now, what's falling through the crack.
Okay.
That's what I would say to talk about. So.
Just as an FYI, I got an email last night from AOC. We've lost two deputies in the line of duty that are related to each other. Alice Moran in a plane crash in the 70s, and then her son-in-law, Tom Strice, in a helicopter crash. And they are, there is a House Rules Committee is putting forth a request for the state to honor them, their service. Alex is the first female line of duty death in Oregon. And then Deputy Rice, anyhow, the opportunity to testify to that request is on Thursday. And AOC's public safety liaison offered to come get me from County College, take me to the house to testify on behalf of our county for our two deputies that are being represented. So I thought I would do that. If you guys are okay with that. Just to support.
I have to ask our permission.
Well, I do. I don't represent the county alone. So I just want to.
You can speak.
Okay.
You are. Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that.
You can't convey a message on behalf of the county as a policy until you have more than one board member. It's during a public session. But if you're yourself, you can talk about anything. I'm passionate about this. This is the way I believe. This is what I think should happen. Every day of the week, you should.
Thomas Rice's death had a significant impact on my career.
Yeah.
And my first day in uniform was the day it was supposed to be the day he passed. And instead it was the next day because of the challenges. And I got to take part in an impromptu memorial on the bridge in my first day in uniform. And representing the sheriff's office and then participated in his memorial. And, you know, I attend every year the memorial. And to this day, his wife Rita, his sister, come. And, you know, I don't, until I think the loss of some family last month that weren't of ripe age, essentially. Losing people early has an ongoing impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I think seeing what Rita and, I can't think of the sister's name right now, but they go through every year to come back and relive that and honor them,
mm-hmm.
that's a significant commitment. And it's a significant commitment to our state that they passed in line of duty. So just the fact that it's before a legislature, I thought I would make the opportunity to support it.
Well, if there's something the board could sign in advance or something, a little short note, that would be really excellent.
Awesome.
So we will be around.
It's not until Thursday the 16th, so I would have time on the 15th to get
the word. Yeah, at the weekly business session, that would be a great opportunity.
Okay.
Excellent. The last thing that I have specifically was changing the Parks Advisory Board from 9 to 7. I know that we have one person who's coming up for their term, Bob. Is it Bob?
Richard.
Bob Richardson?
Richardson.
I endorse the idea of moving him forward. I cannot remember. I apologize. Do we have that formally? When does it expire? It's got some time?
March. Just start March.
Okay, so let's do it next week to entertain it to move it forward for it.
Usually I would put it on next week's admin.
That's great.
To go forward.
That's
and then I would give him a membership of 8.
Okay. I'd like to see that the Parks Advisory Board go down to 7. They have a challenge with sometimes a quorum, and that's becoming a challenge for Sarah. Also, the scope and direction of that advisory board is sometimes challenging for her, and that's partially my fault of not giving clear direction to the Park Advisory Board what I see them doing for me, what I need advice on. And what I think the board needs advice on. So we'll work on that. So there isn't anything to change right now. I think through attrition, I'd like to see us reduce the number of Park Advisory Board members from 9 to 7. We did the same thing with the Rural Planning Commission. A number of years ago, it was 9, and we went to 7 with an alternate, and that may be what we ultimately come down to, because those issues kind of are long, and so it'd be great if people had the opportunity to kind of come up to speed before they are an actual member. The turnover hasn't been great on the Park Advisory Board, but when it does happen, it's good to have somebody waiting in the wing. So, that's all I had. Anything else? Okay. Well, with nothing further, I think we're done for the day. We're done for the week, right?
Correct.
We are adjourned at 10:07.
11:07.
11:07.